Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. And now, Star Fuentes.
Welcome. After the half hour, we will be taking questions. The number is 646-716-9663. And I'm excited. I have a very, very interesting guest today. Her name is Sarah Chetkin. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
Sarah, could you give us a little bit or a lot of your spiritual history?
Sure. I grew up in a spiritualist community in Western New York, and I don't know if you know much about spiritualism itself.
I do.
You do? Oh, great. Well, then, one of the main points of spiritualism is seeking the truth within your own heart. They allow, they want everyone to find their own answers, go within, seek their own truth, seek their own understanding of God. We always say the God of your own understanding. So from an early age, I was always encouraged to meditate and to find the answers for myself, to trust in my own intuitive voice, to seek answers from spirit or whatever, just always encouraging my own exploration. So I think that's really the foundation of everything that I am today. If I have, and this is common, I think, with a lot of people nowadays, if I have troubles or anxiety, which I talk a lot about in The Healing Curve, in my book, The Healing Curve, I always start within. I always look for the root. I always look within myself to find a solution or an answer to a problem or a question. I almost never turn to the outside world to find that, because of course the outside world is only a reflection of my own dynamic within myself. I can only see what's going on within me in the external. I can only understand everything I'm looking at through my own interpretation, I think is a more common way to say it. And so any conflict I'm having, any emotions I'm having, the first place to start is within. And I think that's a core part of my own spirituality, is to always turn within, always go within. And more often than not, even to just go within, but without intention, without a question, just sitting silently and still and allowing whatever might percolate up to be there, trusting in the process, trusting that I don't have to say, I want this, or I need that, or my question is this, just knowing that the universe or my own divine center, my own God self knows what I need, knows what I'm looking for, knows what I'm seeking, and will bring that forward for me. So there's, in a nutshell, of my spirituality.
Exactly where most people need to get to is to know that if it's not inside of themselves, then it can't be outside of themselves.
Right.
I noticed you did something that I did. I was very strongly sexually abused as a child, and I ran around the world, walked around the world, and I sought out spiritual teachers, witch doctors, curanderos, and I sought out healing outside of myself. And when I did this, I learned lots and lots of techniques for other people, and a few for myself. So you've gone and studied with many teachers, have you not?
Yes. Yes, I have.
And how was that for you?
Well, in the moment, it was amazing and wonderful and enlightening, and it brought me to where I am today. But I think one of the main things that it did, all of that seeking did, was it just showed me what I just discussed, that no matter what healer I go to, no matter what technique I learn, or no matter what modality I experience, it doesn't matter because the healing has to come from within me. So, you know, when the formula is correct, you know, my friend would call it alchemy. I'm so sorry.
That's
no,
okay.
My husband just came in with our baby and.
All righty. Well, welcome.
I'm so
baby
sorry. That's just
our world.
No. She's going back.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. What was I saying?
So after we go out
seeking, I just realized, you know, it doesn't matter. The alchemy, the transformation, the healing has to occur from within myself. And until I am at that point, at that stage, it doesn't matter who I go to. You know, the magic is within me. You know, if you think of your physical body as part of the outside world, then the shift has to come from within me, from within my eternal self, or however you want to phrase it, from my emotions, from my mind, from my belief systems. That's where the shift has to occur. And then the next healer I go to would be the so-called miracle healer, because I would be ready to shift. It wouldn't matter. So then
And this is one thing you learn. Going from healer to healer is you learn how they are and how those master teachers are, because those miracles come from within them, you know, and they model that in certain ways. For example, Papa Joe was, I see that you had studied with Papa Joe.
Oh, Papa. Here. Oh, Hepa?
Yeah. And many of those people, just their presence was the instigator of healing. And I suppose what has happened to you, which has happened to me, is that we have now become the instigators of our own healings and possibly the instigators of other people's healings through modeling that in our own lives.
Right. Well, that's the hope anyway.
Well, and sometimes you get physical proof of it, and sometimes you scratch your head and go, huh? You know?
Yeah.
Talk to me about your book, The Healing Curve.
It's a book about my journey to all of these different healers and my personal journey as well. And when I was 15, I was diagnosed with a severe curve in my spine called scoliosis. And at that moment, the decision, I was basically at a crossroads, and the decision was, do I go the allopathic way, get surgery, have the Harrington rod fused to my spine, or do I go the other way, look for a solution in alternative medicine, you know, see what I can find in spirituality and what understanding I can gain from everything. So we chose that path with my parents as well. They were very supportive of that path. And so the book is about that, all of that journey seeking healing from scoliosis, traveling to New Zealand, to Brazil, to different places in the United States, different healers and teachers, and then the sort of development of my own spirituality through all of that. And I really do my best to just bear it all, you know, just put it all out there, really show all of my pitfalls, where I made mistakes and fell down and picked myself back up. And it's really a story about seeking healing. It's not so much a story about the actual recovery or the miracle healing, but it's really about the road to that point, you know, and what it entails, what it's like emotionally, how, you know, what are some of my ways of getting through the frustration and the fear. And what is real healing about? You know, what is real earthy, down to earth, applicable spirituality about? How can you take these grand philosophies that people come with and really apply them in your daily life? You know, in your relationships, in your work, in your own relationship to yourself. That's what the book is about.
Well, it looks really good, and I'm going to have my secretary order me one this week. The journey, the journey for me wasn't as comfortable as most people thought it was. I probably has many, many insights into what a fool I was, to what a miracle worker I was, you know, for me, that that happened. And it was a lot of days doing a lot of stuff for tablespoons of information. And when I'm writing my autobiography and I'm on my 300,000 words now, and I haven't even got to 1990 yet. and I'm going through this journey, and I think that people reading these journeys, your journey, my journey, whatever it may be, learn something and grasp something almost as if, but not quite, as they were there. So, it can be bought on Amazon, and your website is thehealingcurvebook.com, correct?
Right, yes.
And please take a look at Sarah's website and take a look at Sarah. Sarah, what do you do right now? Do you do personal sessions for people? Do you teach? What are you doing in the spiritual world right now?
I am doing lectures, and we teach classes, my husband and I do a class together every summer here in Lilydale, New York, which is a spiritual center, and they're open in the summers, and people come, thousands of people come and seek out mediumship, and they take lots of classes on spirituality. So we teach here, and I'm working on articles and trying to find time to work on a book. I have a 2-year-old and a 3-month-old, so I don't get a lot of time, but so I'm doing those things. And before I was having children, I was an acupuncturist, so I would do healing work, real healing work like that. And I'm just, you know, I'm seeing where it takes me. In the last couple of years, I've been more focused on my children, but we're still teaching and writing and having fun.
And if I was to come this summer to see you, to be in one of your classes, where could I find the information about that? On your...
I always post on my website.
Thehealingcurvebook.com.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing that information there. Tell me, what do you think was the most eye-opening, bright light experience you've had this lifetime?
Well, you know, I've had a lot, but the one that came to mind first was, and I write about this in The Healing Curve, was a moment in the cathedral in Santiago de Compostela where I walked into this, I don't know if you're familiar with it, but there's the statue of St. James is in the middle of the cathedral, and there's a little room behind him, and you walk up these steps, and you're in this little alcove, really. It's not a room. It's just a tiny little space, and you're standing behind St. James, and the tradition is you put your hands on his shoulders, and then you ask for whatever you want, and then you go back down the other way, down these other stairs, and it's always filled with people. You know, you walk up the stairs, you're in a long line, you have about 2 seconds in front and behind him, and then there's people behind you waiting to go their turn. And this moment, my husband and I had driven there in the morning. We were staying with friends 4 or 5 hours away. And the whole time, like always, we were discussing spirituality, discussing our goals, discussing everything. And when we got there, it was just very emotional. And I went over to the statue, and I walked up the stairs. And as we did, the whole place cleared out. Nobody came in. I saw them at the bottom of the steps. But I just suddenly, as I was sitting in the room or standing in the little alcove, I just was overcome by this amazing feeling of forgiveness, of protection, of strength. And I was able to, in that moment, really release so much. Just release isn't even the right word. It was effortless. It just, everything just kind of fell off of me. All of my anxieties, all of my fears, my worries, my guilt, it all just sort of fell away in the presence of this other energy. And in the book, I talk about, you know, what was that? I mean, I was in this cathedral, and I'm not Christian. You know, I wondered, how do I explain this kind of experience? And really what I think it is when you remove, when you stop distracting yourself, you know, when you become fully present to yourself, to the world around you, when you allow sort of the veil to come off, you know, the veil that we put there, our own doubts, our own belief systems, everything. When you let go of all of that, that's what's there. That's what's left is that energy. I mean, that is the truth of us. That's the, at the core of our being is this beautiful, pure energy. You know, it's like, it reminds me of some like golden light or something, just as pure and beautiful and as strong as you can think of. That's what's within us. And when you let go of all of your belief systems and your, you know, maybe you could call it ego, but I don't really like that word. But when you let all of that go and you really see yourself as you are, that's what you're looking at. That's what you'll experience. And in the healing curve, I talk about humility and how humility is not a quality. It's not about how, you know, recognizing how unimportant you are or how, you know, degraded you need to be or anything like that. It's about how powerful you are, how pure you are, how important you are. That's when you come to that understanding, that's humility. That's why when you're in that state of being of humility, nothing can touch you, nothing hurts you. That's why Jesus said, turn the other cheek. You know, that's being in the state of humility. You realize nothing happens to you. You aren't this physical body. You know, you, nothing can happen to you. Nothing can affect you. You're this incredibly beautiful, strong energy. That's what you are. And I think that's what I recognized that day in the cathedral. I was coming in touch with my true self. And in the face of that, I could let go of everything else. Because how can you worry or feel anxious or be angry when you recognize that this beautiful energy is you? That's you. That's who you are, this infinite God self.
It sounds like an amazing, amazing moment. I particularly can remember one situation. I was in Mexico, and I was studying with my then teacher Esperanza, whose lineage I happen to hold now. And she took me to cenote, and a cenote is this water pond that just comes up in the middle of the jungle, and it's perfectly clear and it's fresh water. And she sat me down and she said, "You will be the first white person to ever be invited into this sacred pond." And I got into the water, and it felt clear and fresh because, you know, Mexico's pretty hot. And all of a sudden, a voice of a teaching she had given me beforehand started repeating in my head. And it reminded me of a few core things about all beings, and it seemed like the greens got greener and the lights got brighter, and it seemed like I was immortal and humble, invincible and gentle and strong and kind, and it seems like it was just pure light. There were no excuses, there was no shadows. It was this moment where I could see the trees breathing. Do you know what I mean? So I had my moment like that in the jungle in a cenote, and it's a very, very I don't want to use the word awesome, but wow, it's just a very wow experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when we get to those moments, one of my teachers once told me that the word humble has the word hum in it. And hum is about being a vibration. When you know, people who stutter, they hum and they
mm-hmm.
hum the words,
yeah.
And they can speak. And the word humble has hum. And this is a vibration that you keep there that is like a cocoon, a safety, and an unsafety. It's a risk and safety. It's everything that is and everything that was around you. So there's no drama. There's no conflict. That there's constant love. And I always remember her saying that word hum. It's about a vibration. It's not about you being put down or being lowered.
Right.
And so
right.
That was a very, very interesting teaching to me. So what else would you like to share with our audience that you think it's important that all the spiritual people and the healers and the practitioners listening right now hear from you?
Well, you know, something you said about it all being from, you know, everything being linked to love. And when I was with John of God, I asked him, you know, how can I be the best healer that I can be? You know, how can I be there the most for my patients? And I was young. I think I was 20, you know, early 20s or something. So, of course, I was expecting this, I don't know, more complicated answer. And the only thing he said to me was love. And at the time, you know, being that age, I just thought, oh, yeah, duh, of course. You know, I mean, love. And do you have anything else to say? And but now, you know, I really understand that, and I was just reading something about this too recently, that we, you know, how sometimes people say all emotions either come from love or from fear. You know, everything is from love or from fear. And actually, everything is from love, because if you're feeling fear or if you're feeling anger, think about the fact that you wouldn't have those emotions if you weren't also feeling love, because you wouldn't care at all. There would be no response. You know, if you don't love, you don't have fear. There's no reason to be afraid for somebody or afraid for yourself or afraid of something that might happen if you don't also, or fear of change if you don't love what you already have. You know, a fear for your children if you don't love your children. You know, if you don't love, you can't have fear. You can't have anger. Everything is rooted in love. And the metaphor, which I thought was so beautiful, is that if you have the moon, for example, the moon can eclipse the whole sun. But the moon, of course, is much smaller than the sun. And the sun is this big, huge ball of energy. But the moon can eclipse it completely. And from where we're standing, it looks like it's entirely covered up. Well, it's the same thing with negative emotions. When we have fear or anger, it's merely eclipsing that bigger source of everything that we are, which is love. So taking that back to healing and what John of God said to me, of course, I mean, the very core of us is love. And if we can tap into that energy to do our healing work, then nothing else is needed. You know, so few of us are walking around without preconceived notions, without judgment, without guilt or anger or any of the hang-ups that we have. Hardly any of us are just within this cocoon of love all of the time, aware of that, you know, aware of our true nature. And when you encounter somebody who is or who is capable even for a moment to get into that space, you're able, you're inspired to achieve that height as well, and you're able to let go of some things. And I think that's where true healing can happen. I mean, I think that's what a sort of natural healer does, gets into that space, that vibration, and creates a space that allows their patient to go there too, to feel comfortable enough to release their hang-ups, their belief systems, their, you know, all the things that keep us from being in touch with that true nature.
I totally agree with you, and I'm going to just tell you this. I get to that state. I am in that state, but I don't hold it. I for some reason, I just can't keep it 24 hours.
I know.
I can get there,
yeah.
And I can get there 4 hours, 6 hours. I can hold it better almost when I have students and when there are people in my church, then I can hold it with myself, which always amazes me. And I'm very quick to notice now when that goes away. One of my teachings is that if you say I don't care, you care enough to say I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't care, you wouldn't say I don't care. So I want you to go back and look at why you love that so much that you're personally affronted enough to say, I don't care. And people look at me and scratch their heads, but I really believe I don't care. Well, we do care. We do care.
Mm-hmm.
And for us to be able to say that, love that, be that, I remember being with my teacher Esperanza, and she says, oh, come on, come on, we're going to the next village. Someone is dying, and I want you to sit through this person's death with him. I want you to be with him, and I want you to teach you the process of, helping people cross over. So we walk, and we talk, and we get to this little palapa hut with, broken walls and whatever else, and palms missing from the ceiling. And then there's this man, and he's laying in this bedding, and the bedding is filthy and dirty and hasn't been cleaned in what looks like a year. So I sit down next to him, and I take his hand, and I look up for approval for Esperanza, and she looks at me, and she says, crawl in his bed and hold him to your heart, for nobody wants to leave without feeling love. And I'm looking at this bed, or this house, and I'm like, oh, ah! And then a piece of me said, go. And I crawled into there, and I held him for 3 or 4 hours. It smelled, it was hot, and I held him to my chest. And I felt when he left, and it didn't matter then. It didn't matter what was in the bedding, the rags. It didn't matter how he smelled. And there was this peace that now when people have cancer and when I go to do healings, I crawl in bed and I hold them, as best as I can around whatever wires there are, and have been kicked out by several doctors on patients' beds. What are you doing? I'm loving this guy, healing this guy. I get out of there. And when people come and pass with me, I hold them to my chest. Sometimes I have their wife do it. And to love enough to be there, it was like I had to take a dump truck, and I had to haul it up to my consciousness and dump 3 times out of my consciousness to be able to be there and be connected. And what a true, meaningful lesson that was for me. And, it's amazing. It's amazing how much shit we put in between ourselves and the ability to love.
Oh, I agree. I agree. It's amazing how easily we can slip into anger and fear and frustration and anxiety. It's like those things are just there, and we fall right into them. It's not a challenge at all. But to actually be happy, to truly feel content throughout the day, to feel loving and accepting, is so hard. And it's a challenge I'm always willing to take up and look at and work on. But I often discuss it with my husband. Why is it so hard to just trust and love and be in that space and be happy? Why does that take so much effort? And for some reason, fear and anger, we're like addicted to it. It's the drug that we always go back to. And being content and at peace and joyful is a life's work. It seems crazy. And
our society perpetuates it.
Mm-hmm.
Our commercials, our whole way of being. So it is just an amazing experience to be content and to be satisfied, to show gratitude. And, I tell people, oh, look at all these beautiful essences and things you have. Well, as they're putting away the thing they just got, I'm ready for the next thing. And I said, Spirit, God knows you got something when you show gratitude for it and the next thing. Even if it's an esoteric essence like love or healing, the next thing will come to you when you show gratitude. And people have a hard time with this concept. And, and the other thing I say that pisses people off, you're as sick as your secrets.
Oh, yeah, that's true. We say emotions buried alive never die, you know? You just, you have to get in there and uncover the things you don't know about yourself anymore, the things you've hidden from yourself, the lies you tell yourself, the abuses you do to yourself. It's, and it can come from the simplest things too. I had a student once, well, she took one of a class that we were teaching, and she, one of the exercises was, you know, taking somebody that, you know, because everything is a mirror, so taking someone that you were very frustrated with, you know, and putting, I had them do a little meditation where they pictured that person, and, you know, they had to really, really feel that person as if they were right in front of them and allow all of the negative stuff that they felt towards that person to come up. And at the height of that, I asked them, okay, now open your eyes and write down a list of everything you're feeling right now, all the things you hate about that person. And they did that. And then after they were done, I said, okay, now look at all these things, and I want you to go down the list, and your partner will, you know, you close your eyes, and then you'll have a partner, and that partner will read each item. And then you are to recognize in yourself those same qualities, moments in your life where you did the same thing, where you were that same, where you were embodying that same emotion or whatever. And I had a woman, and she, her, the top of her list was selfish. You know, that was the very first item. And she said, but I'm not selfish. You know, she just, I'm not selfish. There's nothing about me that would say selfish. You know, I give and I give and I give. In fact, I give so much I'm exhausted. You know, I it's all I do is give. I give to my husband. I give to my children. I give to my neighbors. I'm always, always giving. I said, all right, that's fine. I said, I want you to close your eyes. And, you know, I had her close her eyes. And I said, tell me the last time you were in a situation like this where you were giving. Okay, or something with her husband. How do you feel? Does it feel good to give? No, you know, of course. She said, no, it does not feel good. I'm tired. I don't want to give, but I do. I said, okay, can you tell me the first time that you had this emotion? I mean, where did all of this start? And she immediately flipped back to a memory, which she had forgotten, of when she was a little girl and her parents were having a big fight and someone yelled to her, go get help. Because there was something going on with her father. I don't know the details, but, or I won't share the details anyway. And because she was so little, she was 6 years old, she was terrified, and she couldn't move. She was just stuck there, and she didn't go get help. Well, from that moment on, in her head, she always had the idea, I'm selfish, because I couldn't go get help. I wouldn't go get help. I'm selfish. So since she was 6 years old, she had been repeating that under the radar forever. I'm selfish, I'm selfish, I'm selfish. Well, what did she do? She did everything in her power to prove to herself that she wasn't selfish, and that's where this excessive giving of herself began. It didn't bring her any joy. It didn't lift her up. It exhausted her because it wasn't about the joy of giving. It was about avoiding a belief system she had about herself. But she didn't know that until we went there and looked at it. So, you know, that saying, you're as sick as your secrets, is so true. You know, she didn't know. She had that secret from herself. And when she finally saw it, she was able to make a shift.
That's good, and we're coming up on commercial break right now.
Okay.
You're listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Star Fuentes is a master intuitive healer and spiritual teacher and has been a pioneering student of metaphysics for over 50 years. She has learned lifetimes of priceless information from her years of seeking out and living with indigenous healers and shamans around the world. Visit her website at www.starfuentes.com and then join her here every Wednesday night on Spiritual Connections Radio as she shares her knowledge with you. Once again, Star Fuentes.
And your secrets, and your stuff. If spirit is like a funhouse mirror. And let's say you worked that 60% of your anger out, and somebody really 90% anger shows up in your life. You can say, oh, that's not me. That can't be a mirror of me. But that may be the exact thing you need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
So spirit, you know, even if you have 4% left to work on, and you're 1% angry, somebody with 90% anger will show up in your life.
Absolutely.
So it's not necessarily a accurate mirror, but it is definitely there to show you what you need to heal in yourself. And the worst secrets are the secrets we keep from ourselves, not the
mm-hmm.
secrets that we don't tell other people.
Right.
And that's such a big, big piece for people to get. So I'm noticing you have articles, and you have some really great articles there. How often do you post an article?
Well, usually a couple times a month or so, but lately not so much because I just, like I said, we were adjusting
uh-huh.
to having two kids, and my husband started, you don't need to know my whole personal life, but he was working from home. Now he works out of the home, so it's been a big adjustment the last couple months. So, but I'm going to start now. We're getting more in the swing of things, so I'll start again picking up and doing more articles. I love writing. You know, I get an idea, and I want to flesh it out for myself. And in that learning process, I just, you know, I bring some cohesiveness to the writing, and it becomes a great article. It's, you know, it's just sharing my own learning and my own journey. You know, the journey never ends, so I'm always meditating and picking up different ideas and sharing them with people if they care to read it.
Well, you know, and yes, people do care to read it, and some people can only read it when they're ready for it, and some people
right.
read it when it's appropriate for them. So it's an interesting process. Mark, do we have any callers lined up?
Yes, we do. Let's go ahead and bring on Marilyn.
Yes, hi. Thank you.
Hello. What is your name, sweetie?
Marilyn.
And what question do you have for Sarah and I tonight?
I would like to get some feedback on my son. He's struggling with some things and wanted to get some spiritual insight as to how best to support him.
Okay, sweetie, tell me how old he is.
He's my son is 23.
Okay, Sarah, do you want to answer this first and then let me go, or do you need more time to feel it out, think it out?
Oh, let's hear the, you can go, or let's hear the story, or whatever you like.
Okay, you go ahead, Sarah, and then I'll come in behind.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm intuitively, you mean, or?
Yeah, intuitively, and anything you can tell the mom to help her with dealing with her son.
And your son is 23?
Yeah, he's really in some crises right now and trying to figure out how best to support him.
Let me just tune in for a moment, please. Well, first of all, the first thing that comes to me is just, you know, I don't know much about the situation, but as we've been talking about, just being in a loving space and bringing yourself into working on yourself and your own notions about the whole situation, you know, really just uncovering for yourself whatever fears you may have, whatever anger you may have, whatever frustrations you may have. Because, of course, when we approach anybody in any situation, we want to be clear. We want to be free from any fears or attachments. And that encourages the people around us to open up and to see possibilities for other pathways, to see possibilities. You know, sometimes when we get into these states of mind where we're struggling and we're in crisis, we don't see any other choice. We feel there is no other choice. There's no choice except the path we're on to struggle and to divert ourselves with unhealthy behaviors or attitudes, and there's no way out of that, you know, and it becomes like we're spinning, you know, you're just a spinning top and there's nothing to cling to, nothing to grab onto to stabilize. And when you're in that space, you need someone to, or you need someone or something to come in and be the anchor, you know, to to stop the spinning, to clarify, to show, or to present another choice, to open your eyes to some other possibility, that there's a way out, that there's a doorway or a path. And I feel like that's probably where he's at now. Just there's no, it's like being in a room or like I said, like a spinning top. You're going so fast that you can't see the possibilities right in front of you. So if you can somehow be that calming presence, you know, that anchor, that doorway for him, then maybe he can slow down and calm down and see the reality of the situation, which is that in every moment we always have millions of infinite amount of choices and steps that we can take to shift the road we're on. And I can say I just came out of something, and I don't know if it's maybe a similar energetic to what your son is going through, where with my daughter being born, I just went into this like a postpartum thing, and I'm not saying that's necessarily that's not the situation with your son, but I was in a very dark place for a little while there, and very anxious and filled with fear, and I just couldn't get out of it, and I felt constantly in just dread and fear and spinning, like my life was going out of control, but it wasn't necessarily the case, you know. So many of the things that I was fearing, they never came to pass. There was nothing to be afraid of, and I just in my mind everything was black and tarry sticky energy that I couldn't get out of until I started listening to the people around me and trusting them for that moment. And I know we talk a lot about going within, but sometimes you need to find faith in the people around you, the people who love you, and use them as a tether to get you out, you know, to get you back into the light.
Did that help, sweetie?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to say, you know who your son truly is, and you just don't know how he's going to get from where he is now to where he truly is. And listen, Mama, the egg is cracking. The whoever he's been, and you've watched this egg, and you're going, oh, my God, there's a crack in the egg. Oh, no. And then the egg is cracking all over. And through his own personal lessons and through his own learning about love or not love or healing or what's healthy or not health, he's going to come out of this shell. And he's going to be what you know his potential is, what you know is inside of him. But unfortunately, neither you or not I will know the process that it's going to take him to get out. So watch him, love him, don't support his struggle, don't negate his struggle, but be there in loving presence for him. Do you understand?
Yeah.
Thank you. All right, Mark, who's next?
Okay. We are going to bring on, let me just switch this around. Is it Trina or Trisha? I always get the name typed wrong.
I think it's Trina.
Trina.
Is it Trina?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, can you speak up just a little bit, sweetie?
Is that better?
Yeah, honey. What is your question?
I was just wondering if I'm meant to be with a guy or if I'm meant to live the rest of my life alone.
Ah, that is a very interesting question indeed. Are you meant to be with the guy, right?
With the guy.
The guy,
yes.
Or a guy? A specific guy, right?
Mr. Right.
Oh, look at the dilemma you put yourself in. if I don't have to be with this one, then I can't be with anyone at all. And if it isn't this, this, and this, and this, you know, when two souls meet.
My soulmate.
They meet. Yes. When two souls meet, conditions fly out the window. Oh, his eyes are squinty.
Yes,
oh,
ma'am.
He doesn't speak. When two souls meet, all those conditions fly out of the window. And yes, there was someone there for you. Yes, there was someone coming for you. I am going to travel just a little bit in front of you. And do you already know this person?
I don't know. Do I?
No, you do not. I'm on the borderline about your best meeting time for this person is the holidays this summer. So that's 4th of July, whatever time around there. Pay attention. Make sure you're social at that given time this summer, lake party, pool party, barbecue, whatever it may be. That is your highest point of attracting your soulmate. You do understand he will not come to your front door and knock on your door with an engagement ring, a box of candy, and flowers. You do know you have to get your butt out of the house, right? Hello?
Yes, I do. Are you going out? Yes.
Okay, good.
I don't have very many friends.
Well?
That's my problem.
That is not your problem. That is your challenge. If I go and look in my paper, my Wednesday paper, it says Sunday, VFW are having a pancake dinner, $10, barbecue for the blind children. There's 100 places where you can go. When you meet somebody who is giving of his time and their energy lovingly to the community, it is a wonderful place indeed. So call the VFW, say, I want to pay my $10 and can I help with the dishes? Can I serve coffee, iced tea, anything to give you three extra hours so you don't look dumb sitting there with your pancakes or your whatever it is. And the place you want to be is a place to meet someone who is in service to the community, who is participating in life. You don't have to have dozens of friends. You just have to have the knowledge to be able to participate in the community so that you are available.
Gotcha.
You got that?
Gotcha.
Sarah, do you want to say anything to this lady?
Sure. I would say that the only destiny you have is the destiny you create for yourself through your beliefs and your fears and where you choose to put your focus. So if you, meaning that we make choices based on our beliefs. So if you have a lot of fear or a lot of worry about being alone, then you're putting your attention there all the time. So, you know, if you're always focused on the fear of I don't want to be alone or am I going to be alone or what's going to happen, then all of your choices are influenced by those thoughts. You know, all of your energy goes where your thoughts go. So the more you put your attention there, the more you walk down that path of saying I don't have a lot of friends, I don't have a big social life, how am I ever going to meet this person? It's impossible. But when you, if you can find the strength and the courage within yourself to sort of just let that fear go, you know, and start focusing. You know, one of my favorite things to do when I want to, say, accomplish something is to sit and do nothing, to meditate on it instead, to just focus on my breath. You don't have to do anything special to meditate. All you have to do is sit silently and focus on your breath. And when you notice your mind wandering, bring it back to your breath. And, you know, Lao Tzu, I think he says that in stillness, the world is transformed. You know, you can transform your whole life just by starting that simple practice in the morning and in the evening of breathing in and out and focusing on that for maybe 10 or 15 minutes each session. And you'd be amazed how much would shift. You know, your worries would become less. Things would just start to unfold for you. Your focus would be on something else. You know, you want to shift your focus away from that concern and look at other things. And so many people say it, you know, I was worried that I would be alone forever, and I had gone through this horrible breakup, and I just didn't think I was going to meet another person, and it didn't happen until I finally said, you know what, I don't care, I'm strong, I can be by myself, I enjoy my life, I love my life, I like who I am, and I'll just be on my own. And then it was in that moment when they made that shift and that they accepted that and they lost that fear that they met the person they stayed with for the rest of their lives. It happens constantly. And it can happen in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It happened to me. You know, I had the same thing. I thought, well, I had just gone through a big breakup. I thought, well, you know what, I just can't be with anybody else. I'm not going to be with anybody until I find someone who really sweeps me off my feet. 2 weeks later, I met my husband.
Mm-hmm.
So you just,
oh, really?
So pay attention.
Yeah.
Pay attention, do the breath work. The options I gave you were from where your beliefs are and what your pattern has been up to now. That can change. You can have it be tomorrow, or you can sit back home and not participate and have it be next year. Do your breath work and energize that mate by being content with yourself. Thank you.
I will. I will. Thank you very much.
One more, Mark.
One
you
more
have
Mark.
One more for me.
No, we're all done.
All right. Do you have a question for Sarah?
Yeah. Sarah, the question I have for you is, when it comes to clearing or understanding your position in a relationship, when you're in this new dynamic of really taking ownership for your own stuff and figuring out in a relationship, what is your responsibility? What is the relationship? What's the responsibility of the other person? The question is sometimes you're not quite sure if it's something that the other person should be working on or if it's something that you should be working on. I was just wondering if you had any guidance on that.
Yeah, well, I would say from my experience, it's always something that I should be working on. You know, because as I shift, like we've been talking about through the show, you know, your external world is only a replica or a mirror of what's happening within us. So, you know, if I'm having trouble with my husband or we're having an argument, it's hard to believe, but it's my perception. So when I go and I work on all of those things on myself, I go back to him and he seems different. And there's a great process in, I talk about it in the healing curve, in Rohan therapy. It's one of their sessions called male-female. And you actually go within and you look at your male self and your female self. And these are all metaphors, you know. I mean, of course, we're just one cohesive being. But you look at the male and the female to get a better understanding of the dynamic within you. And I've done that session a few times. And every time, if I'm in a relationship, I see the qualities in my male self that are happening in my partner. I see the qualities of the female happening within me, within the dynamic of the relationship. And we just play that out over and over and over again. That's why people seem to always date the same kind of person. You know, even if they try to change, it just always ends up that way. They date the same person over and over again because they're trying to clear out that dynamic within themselves, and that's the best way to work on it. You know, I mean, to see it and to understand it. You put it outside of yourself, then you see it. You know, you really get a true understanding of what's happening within you. So I never would say, oh, that she needs to work on, and this is what you need to work on. I would just always start with myself.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of a tough answer that we don't want to hear because, we're always looking to blame. But
you're responsible for everything you're aware of. And if I'm not having a great communication today with my husband, I'm responsible for that. I am not having a great relationship with my staff, I am responsible for that. So in mastery, in your own personal mastery, you're responsible for everything you're aware of. And if you're aware of something not working, it's up to you to do that work.
And you know what I tell people, too? What's easier, waiting for someone else to change or working on yourself and creating those shifts within yourself? I mean, how easy is it to make someone else change? But they will change once you work on yourself because that trigger won't be there anymore. You'll have cleared that button, so they won't be able to push it anymore. it won't be there. So that dynamic will just leave. And if the person isn't ready to shift with you, well, you know, maybe the relationship will end and find someone else. You know, you'll find someone else who is able to be on that level. But it always comes back to us.
Oh, sounds good. Thank you for guidance from both of you.
Thank you, Mark. So, Sarah, your wonderful book, The Healing Curve, is available on Amazon. Your website is thehealingcurvebook.com.
Yes.
Sarah is a powerful wordsmith. It's amazing what she does in her articles. It's amazing what she does in her conversation. Pay attention. Pay attention to other people. They've spent decades learning things that we can share with you, and you can avoid going down paths that are long and hard, and you can take the route that goes back to you being responsible for everything in your life, for the inner you being your master teacher. Sarah, what do you think we have to be grateful for today?
Well, I think the knowing, or the goal to know ourselves as this beautiful being and this beautiful energy that we've been talking about, just the fact that life is set up to always bring us back to this gift, you know, of this knowledge. And I think everything is so perfectly in order and perfectly structured and beautifully designed to always prompt us to go within and to discover what strong and amazing creatures we really are. If we just follow that formula of always taking it back to ourselves, always going within, always seeing everything around us as a mere reflection, and, you know, understanding that we are living in, so to say, speak, the mind of God, right? I mean, we're within the mind of God and within our own minds, within infinity. And I know that's getting really philosophical, but if you think about it, it's true. You know, we live within the mind of God. And when you come to that understanding, and when you are constantly working on going within, you come to realize that more and more. And living with that consciously, I think, is such an incredible gift. And like you said, it's hard sometimes. We hold it for 10 minutes, you know, 5 seconds is beautiful. So, but I think life itself is such a gift, and I'm really happy to be here and to be able to share this time with you.
Well, we really enjoyed this time. And remember that life leads you back to your inner light, and you can choose the high road, the low road, and you can choose to get there or not to get there. This is a planet of free will, but life will lead you to your inner light. Please pay attention to me on Facebook and Twitter. MasterYourLight.com has fun things to do that are free, classes and things you could take. And I do a webinar weekly. So I have a sacred geometry webinar tomorrow. Please go to StarFuentes.com and check it out. And please participate with Sarah Chetkin by buying her book, The Healing Curve. Her website is thehealingcurvebook.com. And thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
On behalf of Spiritual Connections Radio, thank you for listening to Stargazing with Star Fuentes. Please join us again next week for another enlivening episode. For more information on Star's classes or services, visit her website at www.starfuentes.com or call the office at 501-609-0660. That's 501-609-0660.